the notion of unity, any time that you want to unite, you need a point of unity. You need a center of unity. For the Baha'is, that center of unity was their fundamental resolve, recognition, realization, understanding that this is the age and era of bringing about the concept of oneness of mankind. So the Baha'is began to struggle with this concept. If you want to establish oneness of mankind, you cannot avoid other people. You cannot create homogeneous societies. You have to become heterogeneous. You have to go everywhere. Baha'is began to go to other lands. They called themselves pioneers. These pioneers were the beginning movement of the Baha'is throughout the world. And from there on, developed a vast program of pioneering that Baha'is from Canada would go to 50 other countries, and from England to 50 other countries, and from North America to 100 and 200 countries, and from Iran to almost everywhere in the world. And they just come, and from Africa they come here and back and forth in order to create that interaction, interface, coming together of people, so that you begin to develop that concept of becoming the citizen of the world, trying to put it from the realms of thought into the realms of action. This has been a remarkable process, the study of the Baha'i pioneering in attempting to create a sense of the world citizenship is really merits the study. In the process, we have had, of course, funny experiences. We have become aware of our enormous prejudices. We have had to eat foods that we never thought that we will. We had to sleep in places that we never thought that we will do that. We have to hug and kiss and be allowed to be hugged and kissed by people that we thought never would be done. But it was done, and it was nice. In the final analysis, it was. We also began developed a program, a worldwide program of traveling. We call them the traveling teachers. The whole concept was to go around the world and tell peoples of the world that we are one. This is the era of realization of that oneness. And then we added that the challenge of our integration, because we began to have communities of people. Again, Dr. Laszlo mentioned that we don't have a global village. We have a village that is divided by numerous barriers. Even within the Baha'i community right now, where we have relatively large numbers of people, where, for example, in Canada, in cities, when we have the Anglo-Saxons and the French and the Persians and the Indians and the Eskimos and the people of the Far East and all of those things, we find it very difficult to create an integrated community. We are struggling with the process. We are trying to learn how to do it. But definitely we know that one of the challenges before us to become citizens of the world is that we have to overcome this process of integration, and we have to achieve it. Without it, we wouldn't be able to do. We sing about it, we smile about it, but when it comes to action, we have a challenge that still we have to achieve. Now, as we did that, we began to create also machinery for creation of a new world order. The creation of a new world order now required different kind of organization at the local level, at the national level, and international level. We began to create, elect, bring. It is remarkable what the Baha'is did in this respect. For example, to bring to the smallest villages in the far off lands, places that people never have heard the word democracy, a new model of government in which empowered people at all levels to take their affairs in their own hands. Somebody should study the processes that we have achieved these, and the remarkable way that democracy suddenly manifests itself in a small village in India, in the hearts of the forest in Africa, or in the Amazon, or mountains in South America, and so forth. In the process of creating this world citizenship and this world community of people, we have, of course, always have focused on unity. Abdu'l-Bahá has told us that whenever a group of people are disunited, that assembly of people would be dispersed and would go different ways. Throughout this experimentation that we have had with creating world order, we have seen many a times, whenever a Baha'i community was disunited, it gradually or suddenly dispersed, became nothing, became ineffective, became dead. Whenever the forces of unity were at work, a different process was happening altogether. But also, you know, whenever you try to achieve a major objective, there will be forces from within and from without to challenge, to see how true that objective is and how true your claim is of what you are trying to achieve. One of the most fundamental claims of the Baha'i faith that has been proven is that it has been able to safeguard is unity. All other religions and all other groups of people in the world have been ultimately disunited. Religions have gone into many sects and so forth. This process has been challenged over and over in the course of the Baha'i faith, but nevertheless, the Baha'i faith has emerged victorious in respect to maintaining its unity and maintaining diversity of that process. My time is very short, so I have put aside all of these things. Just want to share with you some unique features of the New World Order, the Baha'i paradigm, as I understand it. I probably wouldn't describe most of them, I just mentioned them. The first one, and it's a note that has been repeated by a number of people here, of course, the first few ones, is concept of the collective growth of humanity. The second one is the harmony of science and religion. The third one, and these are not in necessarily order of importance, is equality of men and women. The fourth one that I want to just briefly focus on is the Baha'i politics of transformation. Human societies, if you want to transform human societies, you have to have certain politics of transformation. And the Baha'i politics of transformation is to harness the forces of growth and the spiritual progress of humanity to create a new society. The Baha'i revolution, therefore, is not a revolution by force, but it is a revolution that harnesses the forces of growth, that ultimately makes the human being to free itself from the bondage of the animal heritage that we have and start a totally new era in our history, which is the age of our collective maturity. Then, there is another dynamic here, and that is the issue of the conflict resolution. How are we going to resolve conflicts in human society? The laws of human interactions, of trying to resolve problems, resolving to decisions, at best, in our society have been those of compromise. Usually is the force of the forces of power are used, and whoever is more powerful, that idea becomes acceptable. This is true in our world today. We are engaged in power politics at all levels. Within, and at best, for example, what we are trying to achieve at the United Nations forums and so forth are the powers of trying to reach some compromise. But reality doesn't accept compromise. Truth is one. And therefore, we cannot go about resolving human problems through compromise. Here is the process that brings into dimension, into focus, the Baha'i art of consultation. I was trying to see how I can describe the Baha'i art of consultation to people in general, those who are not familiar with the Baha'i teachings. And I decided that one way of calling it is to call it conflict-free conflict resolution. At least it makes people to think what you're saying. But the whole idea is that it's not necessary to have conflict in order to resolve disagreements that exist between people or reach to some kind of agreement. But most important in this respect is the whole issue of power. The world of humanity throughout history has been dominated by power. Power fundamentally has been in the hands of men because they had physical power. They began to rule human society along the paradigm, the model of power, of force, of a person who is on authority demanding obedience for the people, from the people who were below them, and then accepting whatever order is given from people who were above. This authoritarian system has resulted in creation of a world that is characterized by competition, by power struggle, by use of force. There is a problem with this authoritarian mode. The authoritarian mode doesn't want change. But we need change because change and life go hand in hand. The authoritarian mode doesn't accept new ideas, but new ideas are necessary because human societies are growing and evolving, maturing. They are complex organisms. The authoritarian mode only shows affection and love those who belong to the group that are considered the in-group. The authoritarian world divides the world in the good guys and the bad guys. That is the concept of the authoritarian mode. The ultimate nature of it, of course, is the Hitler fascist model that we saw in the many other dictatorial systems that humanity have experienced. Mankind, and I use man here, not meaning humanity, but meaning men. Mankind, by virtue of being in control of the affairs of humanity, created a world which was totally taken by violence and aggression. On the other hand, throughout the history, let's see what women did. When the processes were divided, men said, we are going to be a strong one and we are going to go and kill animals and our enemies and carry big pieces of lumber and stone and build a house and so forth, and we are big machos. They were told, women, now you be responsible for creating a home, raising children, taking care of the sick, being kind, being loving, being creative. So men became busy with their activities, and now they have a world with enough bombs to kill humanity 70 times over. And that was a few years ago. And women have created human family, have raised generations of children, have shown us the ways of love, have shown us the ways of affection, have shown us the ways of His Spirit, have sang the songs of human spirit. Men have done some good things also. But nevertheless, the world of humanity now has reached to the point that has to become more feminine. Abdu'l-Bahá makes that statement very clearly. He says that the world of humanity has been governed up to this time, I'm paraphrasing, through force and by men. And masculine qualities have predominated the world of humanity. And he said now it is the era that the world of humanity has to become more feminine. The feminine qualities have to take ascendancy until comes the time that an equilibrium between these two qualities are established. The Baha'i experience, the paradigm, one of the major efforts that we have done during the last 150 years or so, is to try to create a kind of situation that hopefully those qualities predominate. It was in response to this authoritarian mode of behavior that since about after First World War and definitely since Second World War, a different approach to human behavior developed, which best could be put as the indulgent mode. Suddenly people say, forget about power, forget about war, and focus on whatever feels good. They said, if it feels good, do it. 60s and 70s were characterized by these qualities. The whole generation of people began to raise, a generation of people who are self-centered, who are asking for more and more and more, need to be gratified constantly and instantly and without any moment to wait. This is happening because this development of this process has been a reaction to that situation of the power that has been dominating the world of humanity. This kind of a lifestyle, the indulgent lifestyle, creates anarchy, creates hedonism. It creates promiscuity in human behavior and human society. And it does not reflect the various dimensions of diversity that exist in the world of humanity. The Baha'i model is a model that wants to create an integrated human society, integrated in every sense of the word, integrated in the sense of its people, integrated in sense of men and women, integrated in sense of science and religion, integrated in the sense of forces of love and forces of power, integrated in all dimensions of our existence. That, once we begin to create that kind of a world, then that world would have at least four characteristics. First, it will be growth-oriented, rather than power-oriented of the authoritarian system or pleasure-orientation of the indulgent system. Second, it would establish unity in diversity. Unity in diversity in place of dichotomy, dichotomous conceptions, us versus others that you find in authoritarian systems, and the indiscriminate disregard of the identity of unique cultures of the world that you find in the indulgent system. Third, this society, this new model of the world order would be creative. Creativity would be its sign, instead of rigidity of the authoritarian system and the promiscuity of the indulgent system. And fourth, this human society, this new world order, would not follow what is called the authoritarian submission, which means that you obey anything that is told you to do. Socrates didn't do it. Vajdani didn't do it. great humanitarians, they don't do that. They obey much higher principles than that.